This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, it's one of the highlights of summer for a lot of people. It's the music on the Half Shell series and the lineup announced earlier this morning. Clint Newell, who's been with the series since it began, and to talk about it. And here we go with year 30 what now?
It's the 31st year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Going back to 1992. Now, if Dick Nichols were to have that conversation with you that he probably did back then, and if you would have said no and other people would have said no, could you imagine how different Roseburg would be?
Yeah, well, there's always that hypothetical, but, fortunately, nobody said no. And for me and for Dick both, way back in the beginning, we could see the void. That there was, clearly a void of outdoor live summer music in the area. And Dick was passionate about bringing it here and asked me for, my help with it. And so we launched, and really, we never looked back.
I had moved here 3 years before that, actually 4 years before that, and that was one of the things I noticed, having, come from working in downtown Portland and being right by the waterfront park and all the outdoor music that was there. Even though I was usually too busy to go out and enjoy a lot of it, I liked it being around, and when I got down here, I thought, man, you have groups playing at bars and things like that, but there wasn't much else happening.
Yeah, you had the fair, naturally, at the end of every summer, and then you had the Arts Festival at the beginning of the summer, but the fair, essentially a week-long event, and the Arts Festival was just a weekend, so there wasn't much else. So yeah, obviously a void.
Now, if people have moved here since 1992, they probably don't know this, but I can remember it. The area where Half Shell is now didn't always look like that at all.
Well, no, it was just kind of a waste area against the river there, and it was, blackberries and brush, so it was just, a completely unimproved area. And fortunately, the city of Roseburg was left some money by a family to improve riverfront areas, and they elected to use those funds to get that project off the ground and get everything cleared out and things installed.
And as best I remember it, that area used to look basically like things look when you're heading east from the Half Shell area.
Right.
Just a lot of plants and brush. And
yeah, that's where it ended. So you can see if you just extend that on down to the Stewart Park Bridge, that's essentially what was there.
Wow. So a lot of effort to go into that. How long did that part take?
It only took a few months, really. I mean, they started it that year, 92, is when that all took place, and they got it all cleared out, everything removed. They got the bike path put in. They got the walkway put in. Everything installed, sprinkler system. They got it seeded, but there wasn't enough time to grow any grass.
I do remember that part. It was a little messy at that point. And even at the front end of things, talk about that first night.
Oh, that first night was crazy. One of the things we had to do was get electricity down to the stage. And that was, turned out to be kind of a Herculean effort, really. A lot of people involved, City of Roseburg involved, PP&L involved, a lot of things happening there. And we were assured that, they'd have the electricity installed and complete and up and running. And day of show, it was not. And there was a lot of panic phone calls going on back and forth. And they had a crew working on it. And showtime was 7 o'clock, but we still didn't have power at 7. Power didn't actually come on till 7:30. And then, of course, we were just crossing our fingers, hoping that everything worked. And
yeah.
That was a bit of a circus act that night.
Yeah, I remember that sitting there and just kind of watching. And when I got there, I was a little unsure as to what exactly the status was, but just basically watching some of the guys that were still working, I said, I think they may have some issues here.
We definitely had issues. Oh my. Yeah, we had big issues. But, you can't sweat about what you can't control, and they were working on it the best they could. It would have been nice to have had it done sooner, naturally, but nevertheless, it did happen. They did get it done, and they turned the power on for us.
And versus what people see now, talk about the differences in sound and lighting and all of that.
Well, we were on a shoestring budget that first year. We really didn't have money to spend on production and a lot of things. So we borrowed the sound system from Douglas County. They were gracious enough to support us with that. We found volunteers to operate it. We borrowed some lights from the college. We just kind of threw things together best we could, and it was good enough to pass. So we got through it, and we did 6 shows that first year.
And all regional acts, if I remember.
They were, yeah. It was small. I brought down, some people I know from Portland, some players from up there. We brought up the Ashland City Band. We had some local bands. Small budget stuff that was doable.
And, contrast that to now and top flight sound and lighting and all kinds of behind the scenes things that that a lot of people don't see. That first year, I think it was the second or third show, I was walking in and one of the original committee members was heading my way, and I knew something was up. And you probably don't remember this. I think you might remember this. I ended up running monitors for the band, like on no notice, because somebody hadn't shown up, uh-huh. And he saw me, knew what I did on weekends at a church, and said, "You can do this." And I just looked at him. I was like, "You're kidding me!" With a band I haven't practiced with and a gear I've never used. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Yeah, you'll be fine."
Yeah, do the best you can.
Yeah. So that was a bit of an interesting time. I actually did it one other time later that season, but with the had gotten the run through, so I was better equipped to pull it off. Well, talk about one of the ideas at the beginning was to not just have music, but have music that maybe people had never heard here.
Well, yeah, that's part of our mission statement, and a lot of people forget about that, but our mission statement from the beginning, and we hold true to it today, is to bring in music from places that you otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to hear in this area. So we try to bring in music from elsewhere that you're not normally going to be able to hear, that you're going to have to travel a distance to go see, and also pay a substantial ticket price as well. So that's kind of what we do, and it's served us well.
And it's interesting sometimes to take a look at the groups once you get the lineup out. And if you go to their website, see some of the other places they're playing and see how much it would cost to go see them.
Right.
I think that's the one. Kelly Leonard used to do that periodically as an MC and point that out. And I think that maybe got people to be a little more generous with donations.
Sure. I mean, a lot of people can turn around and say, gee, I saved $500 this year. I saved $1,000 this year by not having to, buy tickets for these bands. So, yeah, it adds up in a hurry.
And whether it's somebody in the crowd giving money at the baskets or sponsors contributing hundreds or thousands, it's really interesting how it's worked, and you've been able to have all this long-term support and probably some sponsors since nearly the beginning.
Yeah, we have a lot of sponsors that have been with us for decades, and we have some that have been with us since day one. So it's it just speaks a lot of the community, but it also speaks a lot for the event itself, that shows there's a public demand for it, and sponsors continue to support it because they see the effect that it has.
So talk about this first show, June 27th, the Stone Foxes.
Yeah, the Stone Foxes were here back in 2015. They're a rock band out of San Francisco. They went over really well. We had a lot of people really enthusiastic about them that were really glad that they had a chance to see them. And so we've had a lot of calls to have them come again. And they surfaced as being available this year. So we took advantage of that and put them on the schedule.
All right, we're going to talk about the other groups and more when we come back. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. David Littlejohn with True Wealth Radio at 4. Clint Newell talking about music on the Half Shell. The lineup out this morning, you can go to the halfshell.org website. We've got information as well at 541radio.com. Going through your performer list, talk about this second show on July 11th.
CJ Chenier. CJ's, you know, big Zydeco artist. You know, his dad was essentially the founder of the Zydeco form. And, you know, CJ's really a big entertainer. You know, just, you know, your traditional Louisiana Zydeco, you know, plays the accordion. Very lively show. A lot of energy. It'll be a lot of fun. We haven't done a Zydeco show in quite a few years, so we're due.
And after that, and we should back up and say you're taking July 4th off. You know, the logistics that weekend, because really what I'm seeing out there outside of people that have jobs like mine is that a lot of people are going to create four-day weekends. And, you know, so that just kind of changed that.
Yeah, we discussed that for quite a while. Originally, we were going to do the July 4th date. And then, you know, as things started to get pulled in a lot of different directions with a lot of things going on and a lot of people going a lot of places, we just decided that it'd probably serve us well to skip that week and focus on the remainder of our dates.
So July 18th, ZZ Ward, talk about her.
Well, you know, everybody around here knows ZZ Ward, obviously, from the area, grew up here, has been a sensational success since moving to Los Angeles, and just continues to be on the rise, has done so many things, you know, really, you know, played some incredible venues, you know, did a short tour with Eric Clapton, you know, she played the Bonnaroo. She's played Red Rocks. You know, just really, really scores everywhere she goes.
And kind of a unique blend of her music. Started out a little more pop and hip hop, but the last couple of albums more on the blues, and it seems like she kind of found more of her voice there.
Yeah, you know, she continues to evolve, and she's so capable of exploring so many things. And, you know, right now, that's kind of the groove that she's in. But, you know, I think, you know, just going forward, you know, you'll see a lot of different things from ZZ throughout her career.
So July 25th, the band with a name that we probably couldn't say on the radio a few years ago.
Right. The Heartless Bastards. It's a funny story. It's a cool band. Not real widely known, but a cool band. And, you know, I put there in the press release, Kyle, about where the name came from. You know, the band leader, she was doing a bartending gig. And, you know, one of the trivia questions came up, what's the name of Tom Petty's band? And, of course, you know, it's the Heartless Bastard. So, you know, when she was, you know, in the formation of this band, that just kind of stuck, and they adopted that name and have had it ever since. So kind of a funny story there.
And we'll talk about their style of music.
Well, you know, they're a pop, you know, rock soul type band that you know, kind of has their own niche. But you know, they're very entertaining, and they tour extensively, and have been really popular in a lot of spots.
Your next one, August 1st, I had to look up the instrument and just study for a moment. I'm going to look at that more later, but talk about that show.
Yeah, Sona Jobarte. It's our world music show for this year, and we try to do a world music show when we can, just because it's so interesting. You know, we've brought in so many different groups from around the globe that, you know, play different styles, whether it be, you know, African or, you know, Cuban, Latin. You know, we've done, you know, just a lot of different things. You recall a few years ago when we had Daka Braka come from the Ukraine. I mean, nobody knew what to expect that night, and it was very unique. But Sona Jobarte, she's formerly trained from London, of African descent, plays an instrument called the kora, which is a 21-string instrument. It's pretty amazing music, and you know, everybody should come listen to this just to take it in and learn about it, because it's unique, but it's really beautiful music, and she's one of the very best, and she's doing well. She's teaching it, she's performing it, she's living it. She's the real deal. So it's going to be interesting.
And then you make a big switch August 8th from the last show to that one.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, August 8th we have the Poe Ramblin' Boys, which is a bluegrass band, and they have an interesting story as well. It was a band that was formed by some guys that worked at a distillery in the Smoky Mountains, and they're good. I mean, they're real good, and they made their debut at the Grand Ole Opry a few years ago, and they've been touring a lot. They play a lot of shows. They're a good band. I mean, they're authentic bluegrass, you know, beginning to end, and that'll be a fun night.
Well, I see even a Grammy nomination a few years back.
Exactly. Yeah. No, they're really good. I mean, like I say, they're the real deal, and a lot of energy. It's you know, one of those things. I mean, we don't do a ton of bluegrass around here, but you know, when we do, we've had some good ones.
Talk about this last show. I'm kind of fascinated by this one.
Yeah, the Loud Tizer Band. Really a cool jazz band. Some absolute all-stars in that. Elliot Yaman is a name a lot of people recognize because he was a finalist in the fifth year of American Idol. And he's in that band. Some really phenomenal players in there. The founder of Special Effects is playing in that band. It's a large group. They do some really cool music. Lot of energy, a lot of volume. You know, that'll be a great way to end the season.
And when you say jazz, really, they go a lot of other directions too, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, jazz is a very broad term. I mean, it's a very free form term, but they push the envelope on it. They throw everything in there.
So, 7 shows this year. If somebody's new or just hasn't gotten down there, kind of explain how the evening works.
Well, it's a free concert series, so it's not ticketed. It's all funded by donations, sponsorships. You know, we have a large list of sponsors, like you mentioned earlier, that have supported us for a lot of years. That's how the series is pre-funded. We pass the buckets during the shows to try to raise some money to cover some additional expenses, and the audience has become more and more generous with that over time, which has really helped. And, you know, the park is open. There's no gate. There's no ticketing, nothing like that. So people come in, they put down their blankets. Often they'll show up in the mornings and lay their blankets out and come back to them for the evening and enjoy the concert. So come one, come all, have a good time.
And even that aspect is unique, because a number of years ago I was down there just to kind of see how things were looking, and one mid-morning there was an older couple, probably about 70, who were sitting there reading, and I just was pretty sure they were from out of town, and she looked at me, she said, "Where is everybody else?" And I asked what she was talking about. She said, "Well, we presumed that we would have to sit here all day to have this spot on our blanket." and they were from Portland or somewhere. And I explained how things work. I said, no, you could go out and do all sorts of things today and come back, and your blanket will probably be maybe 6 inches away from where it is now, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And she was shocked. And I checked back with the couple that night, and they were able to go do some things in the area and just couldn't. They said, you know, where we live, you couldn't do this.
Right. Yeah. No, it's worked out pretty well. I mean, there's pros and cons to it, and every now and then somebody gets upset with it. But, you know, when you look at the alternative, this is the only way to go, because people can come and go as they feel. If you hold people out until 5 o'clock at night, you're going to have a mad rush and it's going to be crazy. And everybody stays a lot more calm and whatnot. And you know, the blankets stay there. There's really not a lot that goes on with them. You know, we really haven't had issues in that regard. So it's a pretty efficient system for us. That's well proven over a long time.
And if people want to find out more about the series and who's playing, what's your website?
It's www.halfshell.org, and we will have everything posted on there fairly soon.
All right. Clint Newell from Music on the Half Shell, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.